And do you know what we all need? Speaking of body parts, our mind. What would we be without our mind?
You'd have a brain with that has an R in it?
Sure, but most animals have brains, but our mind, and almost animals have minds,
our
too.
Our mind? R?
Yes, R.
You know, speaking of R, that word, it brings people together, unlike I. Everyone is together in R.
Or perhaps is it overly inquisitive?
R? R?
Are you going to the party?
I thought inquisitiveness was good. I thought that was something we were arguing
aggressive.
Earlier.
Like
it's
aggressive. Like the letter R.
It's also respectful.
You are tuned in to The Underground on KBOO Portland 90.7 on your FM dial. And we are now ending the final round. And now we are waiting to tally up our votes on see which winner is going to win from this fatal three-way. And the winner of the 2025 Youth Collective Alphabet Debate is Elizabeth. Wait, what?
With R. R is the winner.
R? Well, oh, yeah. R is the winner, technically.
With Elizabeth.
Yeah, Elizabeth got the win there.
The win, too. That's Reagan. That's
yeah,
R.
Yeah. You've heard it first, folks. The letter R has been crowned the best letter of the alphabet. Thank you for tuning in to The Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Be sure to tune in on the next fourth Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. for more youth-centered programs. Good night, everybody.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself, only on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, health care, and career services to local communities. Membership information at ulpdx.org.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
We're told that after the war, the Nazis vanished without a trace. But the Italians, the fascists, still dream of a master race.
The history books, they tell of their defeat in 45.
But they all came out of the woodwork
on the day the Nazi died. They say the prisoner of Spandau was a symbol of defeat. Whilst Hess remained in prison, then the fascists, they were beat. So the promise of an Aryan world would never materialise.
So why did they all come out of the woodwork
on the day the Nazi died? The world is riddled with maggots, the maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms and they're fat and full of pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I wanted to kind of set the mood, and I wanted to play a song, and you heard an excerpt from it. It is from the group Chubba Wubba. I know I mispronounced their name, but I think you get the sentiment. They're talking about the day a Nazi died, and it was a live performance, and it kind of sets the tone for where we're at right now. Folks who were looking for an opportunity to find displeasure and follow up that displeasure with hard-hitting actions that would lead to media suppression, educators being targeted and removed, just an overall attack on free speech. And this centers around the recent killing of Charlie Kirk, who is a very provocative, to say the least, activist, right wing, who was executed in front of thousands of people who were at a campus rally in Utah, and many more people who saw it online. In the aftermath, there were folks that, you know, acknowledged what had happened, but also talked about the legacy of Charlie Kirk and things that they liked or did not like about him. And those who expressed their dislike based upon what he talked about, based upon his own words, found themselves being under attack. And we were wondering, what was this about? How did these attacks come so quick, fast, and in a hurry? And then we saw the NFL and the NBA and all these sporting outlets and other places holding moments of silence, and Charlie Kirk being made a saint and being put on the same page with Martin Luther King and even Jesus Christ. This seemed more than just organic reaction. It seemed like something that was very planned. And so I wanted to talk to a media activist, a writer, somebody who is very familiar. She's a media critic, media literacy educator. She's the founder of Women in Media and News, the author of Reality Bites Back, The Troubling Truth About Guilty Pleasure TV, and more importantly, the author of a forthcoming book called Breaking the News. Jennifer Posner is no stranger to our airways. So welcome to the show, Jen, and how are you doing?
I mean, my therapist keeps trying to tell me to stop saying, aside from fascism, I'm, and then tired or okay or whatever. So it's hard to answer that question in authoritarian times, but I'm happy to be with you. I'm always better when I'm with you, Davey.
Appreciate that. So I tried to say a little something to set the tone, because there's so many things happening. The latest salvo in this, and probably the biggest fishes, which is why I wanted to have you on, was Jimmy Kimmel being removed from ABC television. And on the surface, it was like, well, he said something that was unsavory about Charlie Kirk. And just looking back at the history of late night television, everything's been fair game. Sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. People have said a lot more inflammatory remarks, and that's just on TV. We won't even talk about the hordes of things that we've heard on radio. you know, from the Michael Savages to the Howard Sterns to you name it, to the Charlemagnes and, you know, in the Breakfast
and the
Club.
Right. Before him.
Right. So people have said things that many of us have not liked, and so-called sacred cows have been game. I've seen people make fun of Emmett Till. People have dragged Martin Luther King through the mud. Pick a person you like, they've been a target, and dead or alive. And sadly, in this country, tragedies have been made fun of as well. There were 9/11 jokes. I remember when there was the tsunami in Asia, 200,000 people died. There were folks right there in New York City where you're at that were on the radio, Hot 97, and they made fun for days and were unapologetic about it. And so
people on radio, but even in news media, I remember after Katrina, in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, I was doing as much as I could to get women, and in particular Black women, on TV news shows to talk about the situation, because there were so many commentators and anchors dragging the people who remained in Katrina and who either died or were displaced because they said they were too stupid to leave. They were idiots for bringing it on themselves. There was a Fox guy. I think it was a Fox guy. I can't remember now because it's 20 years ish. There was a person that I wrote about, and I remember doing a speech in my media literacy speeches about, who had spent a whole segment talking about how the women who had been displaced from Katrina they shouldn't plead poverty because they could easily get jobs basically as prostitutes on the street. Right. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm like bursting to get into what you're saying, because there's across the board, we have freedom of speech, we have freedom of expression, and we have the First Amendment that protects journalists as well as, constitutional rights for artists. And it's bad enough when all of this kind of stuff that you're talking about happens in the public debate, right? It's even worse when it's from journalists. But when it comes to comedians like Kimmel, like Colbert, like George Carlin decades ago, like W. Kamau Bell, like Samantha Bee, John Oliver, when it comes to comedians, it is a comedian's job, if they're good, especially if they're a satirist, it's their job to punch up. It is their job to lampoon power. And if a country does not allow comics to joke about their leaders, it is not a free country. Think about the nations across the world. Where can comedians not say jokes about their leaders? Putin kills people for that, right? Mm. Jails people for that. Countries like, under Kim Jong-un has a very thin skin. China, Uganda, Ethiopia, they're all authoritarian countries. Autocracies across the globe have several things in common, and one of the things in common is that they suppress free speech, they disallow comedians, and they also censor journalists.
Jennifer, I appreciate that, and I'm glad that you gave some extra context to what I was talking about. I'm looking at the uniqueness, and I don't want this to just land on Jimmy Kimmel. I think personally, he'll be all right at the end of the day. And I don't want people listening to think, well, why are we worried about a millionaire? You know, he's got plenty of things.
Right.
Because immediately they're saying, well, what about the Black woman that was fired from the Post? And what about this sister and this professor and this lecturer in Texas that was let go? And all those sorts of things, which leads to a larger situation. Jimmy Kimmel was more than just a comedian. He was a guy with a platform, and it is on those platforms, in a world where news has been shrunk and it's reduced itself to not doing a lot of investigative stuff. Some do, but in many places, you know, you were getting your news from late night talk shows. At least you were being alerted to issues that might not have been covered, or a perspective that is often overlooked. And I think there was a study, you tell me because you're the expert, but there was a point in time where most people were getting their news from Jon Stewart and those late night talk shows. That was the go-to. And so Jimmy Kimmel was more than just a comedian. He's a communicator. And so that's one thing that I want to park here, because his suppression seems to go in line with the capitulation, which you've written about very excellently, about all these news outlets that have gone one after the other. You know, I know you had put some stuff out, and I don't know if it's been available, but I'll just, looking at this list, you talked about, you know, the Trump administration suing all these outlets, Disney, you know, CBS, the Des Moines Register. And you described that these were lawsuits that could probably have been won, but these outlets decided that they were going to settle. And I think the Des Moines one did fight, and they got their thing dismissed. But, you know, this is a scare tactic. You're looking at this administration threatening to revoke the license. And even this was the case with Jimmy Kimmel. It was like, look, we don't like what he said. And basically what he made fun of was not Charlie Kirk, but he made fun of Donald Trump and his reaction to Charlie Kirk, and showed him in real time talking about a ballroom versus the death of his friend. But they said, we'll take your license away. And so this seems to be the underlying concern, that criticism could lead to folks in court, or if they're working for an outlet, their license threatened, or all sorts of things that are pretty insidious, but also in line with the type of suppression that you just described in these other countries.
Yeah, so I'm really glad that you are expanding the lens from Kimmel himself to what this represents. I think it's really important to see the suspension, the quote-unquote indefinite suspension. So he's not technically fired. They could bring him back. And it's up to us as listeners, it's up to us as comedy fans, but much more importantly, it's up to us as every single American citizen or not, who can make a phone call or write a physical letter. They take those much more seriously than a comment online, to Disney, to tell them that we won't tolerate capitulation to state censorship. They could bring him back. But the thing about this Kimmel suspension is that since Donald Trump won re-election, even before he was in office, and then especially in his first 100 days, he has weaponized his administration. He has weaponized and has installed an FCC chair to weaponize the Federal Communications Commission, which is supposed to be an independent government agency with the regulatory mandate to protect the public interest, not to be an enforcement arm of the White House. He has sued numerous media outlets. He sued CBS over a 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris that he said was election interference. That was the supposed basis for the case. Election interference, because they edited the interview, which every TV news station always does for every interview, because you can't put 3 hours or 45 minutes into a 6 minute interview, whatever it is, right? Routine. So that was a very baseless case. They could easily have won, but instead CBS settled for $16 million because Paramount had a merger on the table with Skydance Media. Skydance is owned by David Ellison, who's a Trump ally. It was a multi-billion dollar merger that Brendan Carr, the FCC chair, had to decide, could that merger go through or not? So to CBS, just like to ABC and Disney, So ABC and Disney were also sued for quote unquote defamation because George Stephanopoulos made on a technicality, he said during an interview that Donald Trump had been found in a court liable for rape when New York law describes what he does as sexual abuse. So that did to E. Jean Carroll as sexual abuse, even though federal definitions do describe what he did to E. Jean Carroll as rape. Stephanopoulos used the word rape instead of sexual abuse. On that technicality, Trump sued ABC and Disney for millions of dollars. And they, instead of also trying to fight this very easily winnable case, because that did not meet the legal definition of malice or defamation, they settled for $15 million. They were the first domino of the lawsuits to fall because Disney wanted tax breaks and regulatory approval and all of that. Then CBS and Paramount settled because they wanted their Skydance merger to go through. And right before their Skydance merger went through, a Paramount exec was meeting with Trump officials. When they did settle, Stephen Colbert on his late night comedy show called it a big fat bribe in one of his jokes and did a whole bunch of jokes about it. 2 days later, Paramount fired Colbert out of nowhere, absolute shock, out of nowhere. And not only fired Colbert, canceled the entire Late Show franchise. Now, this is important because Donald Trump has been railing in speeches, in interviews, on his Truth Social posts for years, but especially in the last year, railing against Colbert, railing against Jimmy Kimmel, railing against all of the late night comedy show hosts, saying that they should be fired, that they have no talent, that they're bad for America. So as everybody who understands media and understands law has basically seen Paramount firing Colbert as a sweetener for the deal. So within 2 days, maybe three, Paramount settles the lawsuit, the frivolous nuisance lawsuit, for $16 million. 2 days later, fires Colbert, and then within days from that, oops, oh well, look at this. It just so happens that Brendan Carr now thinks that the Paramount Skydance merger is A-OK, and he approves it. So then fast forward to Kimmel, who after Paramount settled, Trump immediately came out saying, Kimmel is next, you're on notice. And so not only that, though, the situation.
So he said this before the Charlie Kirk situation.
Oh, yes, way before the Charlie Kirk situation. He's been saying it for years, but especially after Colbert was fired, he said, Kimmel is next, and he posted that. It was a thing he continued to say. So then the Charlie Kirk situation happens. As you correctly point out, he wasn't joking about Charlie Kirk, and he actually sent love and condolences to Charlie Kirk's family and denounced the killing. What he did make fun of was the way that Trump was being hypocritical about it, and the way that what Kimmel called the MAGA gang was trying to sort of gain points and further divide people. Now, I just do, as a really quick aside, want to mention, Charlie Kirk is being lionized in media, not only by the quote unquote, as Kimmel said, MAGA gang, but also by throughout corporate legacy media, even by pseudo liberals like Ezra Klein, as if he was a normal conservative activist. He was not. Turning Points USA, the organization he created, essentially engaged in stalking and harassment and stochastic violence against people they did not agree with. Very, very often those were Black women in academia. I know specific Black women, personally, I know these women who were on Turning Points USA quote unquote hit list. So this is a man who had a hit list through his organization of professors who said things he didn't like about gender or race. And then as soon as he put them on the list, the hordes of his followers would stalk them, would harass them, would call their would flood their universities with calls for them to be fired, so much so that their universities were scared for their safety. And he,
I think Professor Stacy Patton just recently wrote about that and said, I think it's good, not a hit list, but it's called the Professor Watch List.
But within the people who were targeted by it, it was essentially referred to de facto as a hit list, because the target list meant the people who were being targeted by people who are no strangers to violence.
Right.
So, and he advocated gun violence and once said that when he was asked about the death toll of school shootings, which it's disgusting and horrible, and I 100% with my full throat denounce political violence, denounce the assassination, denounce every shooting, not only of Kirk, but of the queer folks at the Pulse Dance Club, of the Jews at the Tree of Life shooting, of all the children who've been killed year after year, of all the hate crimes that have been happening. But he was asked about those kinds of death tolls, and he said it was worth it to protect gun rights. Anyway, so Kimmel didn't joke about Kirk. Kimmel joked about the reaction, right? So then the next day, Brendan Carr, FCC weaponizer, goes on a conservative podcast and rails against Kimmel, saying that this is unacceptable, it shouldn't be allowed, and that affiliate stations of ABC should quote unquote push back. And they should demand that, they should tell ABC and Disney that they will preempt Kimmel's show. And so Disney, and that they should pressure Disney to remove the show. And he said also specifically that if Disney didn't quote unquote do the right thing, there were quote remedies that the FCC could take. And he sounded like every little bit the mob boss when he was talking about this, because he said, and I quote, "We can do this the easy way or the hard way." And by that, he meant Disney should basically punish and remove Kimmel, or there would be potential license revocation and fines. This is absolutely, I wouldn't say it's necessarily the worst bit of government overreach around First Amendment issues that we've seen from Trump administration. I can talk about that in a minute, but I do think that it is the most public and it is the most transparent so far act of state censorship. You have a government agency that's meant to protect the public instead going after a comedian that the president hates and has said should be fired, telling companies like Nexstar, which is a local TV giant and has a merger on Carr's desk, just like Paramount had the Skydance merger on Carr's desk, Nexstar has the Tegna merger on Carr's desk. Now, the Tegna-Nexstar merger would lead to Nexstar having 80% of all U.S. TV households, a reach of 80% of all U.S. TV households. It is essentially an illegal merger because it violates broadcast ownership caps. Now, Carr says that ownership caps are arcane. Carr also wrote the Project 2025 chapter on communication and media, and he has said he wants to get rid of ownership caps. He doesn't have the authority to do that. Only Congress has the authority to do that, but he is set to approve the merger anyway, because Trump signed some sort of order saying that agencies can do it. Talk about it, but it would get too detailed. In any case, the Nexstar merger is on his desk. They're waiting for approval. So when Nexstar hears him encourage individual station owners to pressure Disney, they're like, oh, look, we can give Brendan Carr a tidy little gift. And so they pressure Disney. They say they're going to preempt all the shows. And because of that, then Bob Iger, CEO of Disney, has these emergency meetings and is like, well, even though we know that Kimmel didn't say anything technically wrong and he had every right to do it, we're going to eventually, they landed on, we're just going to suspend the show indefinitely because we want to make money. So Disney, and because we don't want to give up potential regulatory issues, they also have a merger on the table. They want to buy Fubo.
Wow.
Yeah. So Nexstar wants to buy Tegna. Disney wants to buy Fubo. Both of them combine. Nexstar pressures Disney. Carr pressures Disney. Disney takes Kimmel off the air specifically because the state has censored the content. And as soon as that happens, Trump says, excellent, this is great. Now the rest of it, he does this whole other post about how the rest of them are next. Seth Meyers is next. Jimmy Fallon is next. I don't remember if he specifically noted John Oliver and Daily Show, but those are the ones that would be more likely to go. I don't know why he'd target Fallon. Fallon's kind of a nonsense game guy. He doesn't
do criticism.
But anyway, so why people are upset about the Kimmel cancellation. It's not about Kimmel himself, even though he had the right to say what he said. It's about the larger meaning of the government for the first time in a transparent, public-facing way, saying people in America do not have free speech anymore, and the government and the corporations are going to collude to make sure that's possible.
But see, that's the voice of Jennifer Posner, if you're just tuning in. Author, media critic, and well-schooled on these issues. But this is a contradiction, because, as I said, you can turn on a lot of media and see some very incendiary stuff being said. People made fun of George Floyd, right? They talked about things that were very unsavory when he was being killed. Yeah. If we're talking about a president, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were frequent targets. The New York Post, Fox News, even late night talk show hosts, their shots, right?
And even Brian Kilmeade now, you're looking at historical, very appropriate, relevant historical examples. Brian Kilmeade just last week or so said that homeless people should be involuntarily euthanized, and he's still on air. No one at the FCC seems to think that vocally advocating killing homeless people is a violation or hate speech, but they're calling Kimmel's jokes hate speech.
If you're tuning in, that was the voice of our guest this afternoon, media critic and media literacy educator. We're talking about Jennifer L. Posner. She is the founder of Women in Media and News and the author of Reality Bites Back, The Troubling Truth About Guilty Pleasure TV, and the upcoming book, which is tentatively titled Breaking the News. We're going to take a little break here, and we are going to continue our conversation with Jennifer about Jimmy Kimmel, censorship, state censorship, and all the issues that are surrounding these issues, or this particular issue. We're going to take it up on Monday. Meantime, we're going to make way for PNN. So I want you to hold tight for that.
Hard knock radio, east, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to
the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio, Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these Hard Knocks, slipping in these Hard Knocks, listening to Hard Knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these Hard Knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to Hard Knocks, ripping to the hard stop. Learning from the Hard Knocks, living in these Hard Knocks, listening to Hard Knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these Hard Knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to Hard Knocks, ripping to the hard stop.
Welcome to PNN, Pope People's Revolutionary Radio. This is Dee, your co-host, formerly houseless poverty scholar, Pope poet and resident of Homefulness in Poe Magazine studio with Poe Magazine Pope poet and formerly houseless poverty scholars, Tani and Mutiato.
How is terrorizing children not illegal? How is evicting a 100-year-old black elder not illegal? How is kidnapping a teenager while he walks his dog not illegal? How is grabbing a baby out of a mama's arm not illegal? How is putting a 3-year-old alone in a metal cage with hundreds of other children not illegal? How is stepping on a man's neck when he says he can't breathe not illegal? How is poisoning the only water source of thousands of children and elders not illegal? How is running over elders with a backhoe while they are sleeping outside not illegal? How is ICE and police and hate and extraction and eviction not illegal?
This is an occupied Alamo, aka so-called San Francisco. What's been happening here?
At 100 Montgomery here today, showing immigrants that they're welcome in our city and ICE that they're not. This court, 100 Montgomery, is where immigrants show up to have their regular check-ins for immigration. A lot of them are seeking asylum, so they're in the process for getting that asylum approved. Tons of immigrants come here every day. And we're out here having a presence where we distribute resources to them. We can even help accompany them upstairs. We're out here every single Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Anybody can be a part of this. And every so often, when ICE does show up, we're here to do what we can to protect our neighbors and our community. Since we've shown up, ICE has stopped showing up and the abductions have gone way down. So this is really working.
We're peacefully trying to just be here and protect relatives. The violence is coming from them.
Pepper sprayed people and brutalizing them. Later, when they abducted someone and left the court, they used pepper bullets at people right in that intersection. And then they used pepper spray on another protester and a reporter. That's so brutal, the way that they escalate their violence. And it goes to show how desperate they are that they have to resort to that violence. They don't expect people to resist all the atrocities that they're doing, but we're here.
You just heard Pope People's Radio interview with warriors standing up to the colonial terror that is ICE. Kidnapping children and families because of the false border terror. To join the Bay Area resistance, come to 100 Montgomery Street Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. From ICE sweeps to our houseless bodies being swept, on today's Pope People's Radio, we speak with houseless / formerly houseless poverty scholars from other parts of Turtle Island who are facing and fighting the same violent anti-Pope People's violence we deal with here. Welcome in comrade member of the Western Regional Advocacy Project, RAP, and Poe Magazine extended family, Adam. In addition, we will speak with Elder, formerly houseless poverty scholar, now homeful at Homefulness, self-described hobo, Uncle Francis, who comes with the spirit of Aloha and the islands of Hawaii, with his story of Sister Warrior Twinkle, who built and fought for houseless peoples getting land in occupied Hawaii.
Unfortunately, I'm here to tell you that the war on the poor is across occupied Turtle Island and beyond. It's in differing states of horrible, going to terror on any given day. Nothing new under the settler sun. But we have the blessing of having a brother warrior, a longtime extended family member of poor, now hearkening from the Human Right to Housing Collective in occupied Squaxin or Nishali, other territories, Pacific Northwest Turtle Island. Adam, welcome back to Poor People's Radio.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me back. Free them all. Power to the people.
Tell listeners what the mess is that you all are dealing with up there and some of the anti-poor people laws that they've put in place.
We're working in a place called Everett. Everett has, in my mind, upped the ante. You know, I spent a lot of time working in Skid Row. And, you know, Los Angeles was never able to push back because they had places like L.A. Can. So the city was never really able to carry out their plans to put such draconian laws in place. Even though those laws are draconian, you had a people's backstop. Everett, unfortunately, has not had that before. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of good people doing a lot of good work in Everett, but not necessarily that piece. So what Everett has is a law called 13.94. That's their sit-lay law. Their sit-lay law goes even beyond most no sit-no-lay laws. It actually criminalizes people trying to help people on the street. So if you're out there feeding people, or if you're out there giving people blankets or handing out things on public property, you can literally be subject to a misdemeanor simply for doing that. That's their no sit, no lie law.
You have a lot of houseless relatives up there who need resources, which is why people would support them. What's going on with houseless relatives up there? Is there shelters? Is there transitional housing?
People would say, sure, they would say that, but they would be lying their asses off. In the city of Everett, which has a population of 100,000 people, according to their point in time count, there was 394 people houseless. We've been doing a little survey in Everett for the last like 8-9 months. We have spoken to almost 500-600 people that are houseless, and that's just like four of us walking around randomly in the city. We also have something similar to Newsom's care courts, but it's not as direct, and I think it's a little more ingrained into actual police policy. So people will be forcibly detained, but they are limited to a 5150, so you got 72 hours to hold those people. And then they put people out. There is no housing. They're like, well, we're going to connect you with a housing navigator. There's two housing navigators for the entirety of Snohomish County, which is where Everett is. It's sort of a suburb of Seattle. When you get into King County, where Seattle is, of course, it's exponentially worse. You're talking about 50,000 people on the streets, admitted by the government, so you might as well just double that. That's where all the resources are, but as usual, with a service approach to homelessness as opposed to a systematic dismantling of capitalist greed, it's a Band-Aid on a big, big bullet wound.
Can you tell listeners about this thing called the buffer zone?
Everett lost a court case on their original sit-lay zone about 10 years ago. They had to put in a no camping ordinance in the entire city. That was defeated in court. The buffer zones were put in place, originally three small zones of about 6 blocks apiece. Last year, the city council granted the mayor the power to declare a buffer zone without it having to go through process of going through city council and actually having public comment on it. That was their way to avoid public input. They gave her the power to declare these zones, so she expanded them throughout downtown. They also have an ordinance downtown that you can't be a service provider in the downtown area that they've used specifically in only one case to attack an organization called Hope and Wellness, which refused to take money from the city. They funded themselves through peer support with Medicare. So they didn't have to listen to all the BS, so they could actually run a no-barrier day center. People could just come in, get something to drink, and if they wanted to get hooked up with resources, that's cool, because we got resources right here. It's a beautiful place. And the mayor spent about a year attacking them simply because of their location. And not simply, because now they've moved to a new location, and she's still attempting to attack them. that's sort of the weirdness in it. It was because they kind of refused to go along with the BS. Great organization. If y'all get a chance up here or look it up, Hope and Wellness. Good people. Where there's not a buffer zone, there is a stay out of drug area zone or a stay out of prostitution zone. And how those work, you know, if you get a ticket or you get charged, automatically you're banned from the area where you live.
What?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They don't have those in Oakland?
Wow, no, not particularly.
We do not.
They've had them in Everett for at least 2 years.
These are all just ways of cordoning off poor and houseless people or kettling them so that we're all stuck in one area. That's a lie. You know, that's a settler lie of racism and classism. The thing that, that I'm tripping about in this, the way that they name this, so is there anywhere that relatives can be?
North Everett is where all the service centers, all of that is. All of that is a buffer zone. So you can't go hang out and wait for the Salvation Army to open. You got to show up, stand in line in the morning. And if you don't get in to sleep somewhere, you got to make that trip every day and then go hide in the woods or something.
This is the disappearance policy. So tell us what the resistance are.
What you can do here is what we're doing here in Everett, what we're doing in Seattle is just get your people together. They count on us hating each other and thinking less of each other. That's why they try to separate us like that, by race, by class, by anything that they can put in between us. Because the one thing you got in common is stronger than all of that. Okay. And that's the fact that the capitalists got their heel on your throat.
Tell people how they can find you or support your movement up there.
It's hrhcwa.org. hrhcwa.org.
All right.
Bye. All power to the people.
You're listening to Poor People's Radio. That's PNN, not CNN, people. Again, we're blessed to be here on the small part of Unpimped, Unplayed, Unbought, Unsold Mama Earth that us poor folks call homefulness, a homeless people's solution to homelessness. That's how we can even do revolutionary radio like this. And I'm here with my beautiful fellow Poe poets, Poor Magazine Warriors, Dee Allen, and Motiado Silencio. And we were just joined by one of our elder scholars, a self-described hobo. What does that even mean for the 21st century? Listeners may not understand this, not just something to say. It's an actual legacy, so much history and herstory, and so much power, and actually resistance to capitalism. Uncle Francis is on to tell us a little bit about a beautiful group of relatives who are really similar to Homefulness, but they're on the occupied shores of Hawaii, and they're run by a beautiful sister, Twinkle, who transitioned to her spirit journey last year. But tell us the proper way to say that, Hawaiian brother, Uncle Francis. How we say the name of their movement.
Puhunua. It's Hawaiian for a place of refuge.
So that's the name of her beautiful refuge.
Yes.
And it's for houseless relatives in Hawaii. Tell us how they took back that land.
At the moment, there are two of those puhunuas that were established, such as Twinkle did. Originally, it was just a homeless camp, unorganized, had a lot of issues. Twinkle came along, and I never met Twinkle personally. The last time I was in Hawaii, I went down to Makaha, where that encampment was. I understood what was going on there. I spoke with some folks there, and I had mentioned Homefulness here, and I said, when I'm back in California at Homefulness, I call that place my pu'uhonua, my personal pu'uhonua, my place of refuge. Now, a lot of people will ask, what is a hobo? So I'll define it. A hobo wanders and works. There's hobos, tramps, and bums. A hobo wanders and works, but between jobs, he likes long vacations. A tramp dreams and travels. And a bum just wanders and drinks. That's how us hobos define it. No one really knows where the term hobo come from. Primarily, it started after the Civil War and the veterans got on the trains and headed headed west to where the Transcontinental Railroad was built, and that's how it started. A lot of people that get into that life, they're running away from some tragedy in their own lives, mostly divorces or alcoholism. In my case, it was a divorce that drove me. I just wanted to check out of society. I didn't want to have anything more to do with it. So 15 years, I traveled with no ID, no bank account, nothing. Back to Twinkle. Well, Twinkle had been homeless for a good long time, and she come to the encampment, and she took up residence there, and she had a vision of some sort, and began to organize the thing, and decided that this homeless camp would only be a way stop until permanent housing, and that was her vision. The camp was in a small town of Makaha. There's three small towns there, and it's a Hawaiian stronghold. There was another similar situation that happened over on the north shore of the island, windward side of the island, in Waimanalo. Waimanalo is another stronghold of Hawaii, mostly all Hawaiians there. This group of homeless people started camping out at Makapu Beach Park. The guy that was running that was Bumpy Kanaheli, and I knew him. I met him when they first started out. Eventually, with the stubbornness of Bumpy and his crowd, the state just got tired of dealing with those knucklehead Hawaiians, you know. So they finally broke down and gave them 45 acres up, a really nice location. Now, Bumpy's people and Twinkle's people, a little bit different. Twinkle, her vision was just getting people into housing. Bumpy's vision was to get people into housing, but in the Hawaiian way. So the Pu'u Honua Waimanalo is much more traditional ways they do it. First thing they got to do is plant the taro. They restore the water system. Bumpy's Waimanalo people, they're doing it in a more traditional Hawaiian way. Her emphasis was to get people housed. Finally, they got enough money together to buy 20 acres of land. Twinkle did. And they are building traditional frame houses, and they're tiny homes, you know, very simple tiny homes. Now, the land she got is not where the camp is. That's too valuable. In fact, that's a state park land. Yeah. They weren't going to give that land up to her, no matter what, no matter how much people protest.
So it's more up in the mountains.
It's up in Waianae Valley. It's actually way back in the valley.
That's what
which
I heard.
Which is good for them because they want that isolation, because eventually they'll get back to their cultural way. Eventually they'll plant a taro patch. Once they do that, then you could say they're home.
We have to wrap it up, but I just wanted to say, Uncle Francis, we hope you come back for more scholarship. You're listening to Poor People's Radio, PNN. A shout out to Twinkle and Pu'anoa. Yeah. Many times the relatives from there actually connected with us, and we connected with them through digital streets. And people often said there's a lot of the same values. I want to say that Twinkle reminded me of my mama. She didn't take no mess, definitely a ghetto scholar, and, you know, had that vision that Uncle Francis speaks of. And so we send our love out to y'all in the occupied islands of Hawaii. Definitely the ancestors are talking. We're listening. We appreciate you. And we're lifting up all the ways that us poor and houseless people can create our own. How about that?
Yeah.
You know, change won't come from a savior, pimp, an institution. Change only come from a poor people-led revolution.
I need the dollar, dollar.
So that's all for this broadcast of Poor People's Radio. You can follow us on Facebook, X, or Instagram at Poe Magazine, at Poverty Scholar, and Poe News Network on YouTube. You can also get this complete Poor People's Radio podcast with all the interviews and conversations, or any of our previously archived shows on Apple Music, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. All power to the people.
Well, I don't know if I'm walking on solid ground, 'cause everything around me is falling.
hard. An old man sleeps, no roof, no guard. Under the freeway, lost in cold. Somebody's father left out alone. What mother could picture this sight? Her child forgotten, lost to the night. $1 billion homes lying the way, but for him there's no shelter, no place to stay. What happens to us when we fall from grace?
Fall from grace.
When the world turns its back, why do the evil people never ever die?
Die.
While the good ones suffer and ask the sky,
sky,
is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive?
Sky.
As this old man shivers in the dead of night,
die.
Rich people passing their lives full of light, they turn a blind eye, too busy to care, while he's left to freeze in the cold, cold air. Why do the evil people never ever die?
Die.
While the good ones suffer and ask the sky,
sky,
is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive? Why do evil people keep on living? Why so many who are good keep forgiving? One day, someday, things got to change. We can't keep suffering. We can't remain the same.
Thank you.
KBOO Portland.
That's Doc Watson, one of the many artists you can hear on Cascadia Coffee House each Friday morning, when we share a wide variety of traditional and contemporary folk and roots music with you from 5:30 to 7 a.m.